Welcome to the last episode of week 5 of Thomas and the Bible, episode 25 it is. Where did the first 24 episodes go? All right. Okay, today we're in Leviticus, starting with chapter 8. The first two chapters are kind of crap. They're crapters, more like crapters, and but then it starts to get awesome again. By awesome, I mean terrible, which means funny. So I think I'm also going to let you know in this podcast that I will be taking a week off from this podcast. So if you're not caught up, which I would say nobody is, it probably won't even matter to you, because by the time you get caught up, you know, there will be the next episodes. So technically it'll still be a year's worth of podcasts, even though I might not finish it in a calendar year, or maybe I'll catch up sometime. We'll see how it goes. There might be, if there's some parts of the Bible that are just total crap, maybe I'll be able to lose a week and catch up or something. We'll see. But yeah, my schedule is absolutely not allowing me to do it next week. So, that being said, let's get on to chapter 8 here. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, take Aaron and his sons with him, and the garments, and the anointing oil, and a bullock for the sin offering, and two rams, and a basket of unleavened bread. And gather thou all the congregation together unto the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. And Moses did as the Lord commanded him. And the assembly was gathered together unto the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. And Moses said unto the congregation, this is the thing which the Lord commanded to be done. So, and Moses brought Aaron and his sons and washed them with water, because they stank. And he put upon him the coat, and girded him with a girdle, and clothed him with a robe, and put the ephod upon him, and he girdled him with the curious girdle of the ephod, and bound it unto him therewith. And he put in the put the breastplate upon him, and he put the breastplate of the Urim and the Thummim, and he put the mitre upon his head. Also upon the mitre, even upon his forefront, did he put the golden plate, the holy crown, as the Lord commanded Moses. So whoever has this all on, I think it's Aaron, I guess. That was Aaron and his sons upon him. Yeah, he's putting all this crap on Aaron. And I think it would have been funny. So Aaron's finally putting on all the pieces of the super priest suit of death. And I think it would be funny if they probably finally put it all together and it just totally clashed, like, awfully, and everyone just couldn't stop laughing. Aaron's like going back to God. He's like, hey, God, what the hell? This suit looks freaking ridiculous. I mean, each part seemed kind of cool, you know, by itself, but when you get them all together and everything, it just looks like this weird festival of colors. I look like I'm from the 80s. You know, not the 1980s, but the 1380s BCE. Let's just say it was a decade all the Israelites would like to forget about. Horrible music and all that. But yeah, well, anyway, now Aaron has this suit of armor on. He's ready to fight the evil Obadiah Stane. Wow, the name even fits right in. That movie sort of sucked and was good at the same time. And Moses took the anointing oil and anointed the tabernacle and all that was therein and sanctified them. And he sprinkled there. Also, I bet Aaron was like, Aaron had all this crap on in the middle of the desert and was like, okay, this is pretty cool. Can I just take it off? It's just for show, right? To know that we have it. Can I just get it right off? Like, it would have been burning out of his mind. And he poured the anointing oil upon Aaron's head and anointed him. Aaron was probably like, great, dude, awesome, got oil all over my head now. That's good, that's real good, like that. It's a good little tradition we got there, oil on the head. It's not going to come out too easily, and I'm probably going to break out. But, you know, it's what God wants. It's what he wants. Give him what he wants. Oh, I hate my job. And Moses brought Aaron's sons and put coats upon them and girded them with girdles and put bonnets upon them as the Lord commanded Moses. And he brought the bullock for the sin offering, and Aaron and his sons laid their hands upon the head of the bullock for the sin offering. And he slew it. Oops. Moses took the blood and put it upon the horns of the altar round about with his finger, and purified the altar and poured the blood at the bottom of the altar and sanctified it to make reconciliation upon it. And he took all the fat that was upon the inwards and the caul above the liver and the two kidneys and their fat, and Moses burned it upon the altar. So they're all pretty much expert butchers by now. It's kind of all disgusting to me. How many freaking animals they had to butcher every day for all the sin. All the sin. Somehow butchering an animal fixes it. Anyway. But the bullock and his hide, his flesh, and his dung, he burnt with fire without the camp, as the Lord commanded Moses. And he brought the ram for the burnt offering, and Aaron and his sons laid their hands upon the head of the ram. And he killed it, and Moses sprinkled the blood on the altar round about. Disgusting. And he cut the ram into pieces, and Moses burnt the head and the pieces and the fat. Like I said, sorry, these first two chapters are a little boring, but it gets better. And he washed the inwards and the legs in water, and Moses burnt the whole ram upon the altar. It was a burnt sacrifice for sweet savor, and an offering made by fire unto the Lord, as the Lord commanded Moses. So it's pretty much just saying that they did, like the Bible likes to do, you know, like Moses likes to do. It's just saying everything that was just commanded, only this time they're doing it. Instead of just God saying it, it has to go through step by step and say, like, what that they did each piece. Really annoying. And he brought the other ram, the ram of consecration. Ram of consecration. It's like, hey, where's my ram of sin offering? Where, my friend, Mr. Ram of sin offering, what'd you guys, have you seen him anywhere? Like, yeah, he's right over here. And Aaron and his sons laid their hands upon the head of the ram. And he slew it. And Moses took of the blood of it and put it upon the tip of Aaron's right ear and upon the thumb of his right hand and upon the great toe of his right foot. Is there any possible reason that could be important? I think the key... Okay, anyone. Hey, anyone who wants to make up a religion out there, and I suggest you try it sometime. It'd probably work. But one tip I've found in reading this fake religion and others is that you got to have a lot of weird practices that seem completely arbitrary, but treat them as though they're the most important thing in the world. Really, what in the fucking world could be the point of putting the little bit of blood on your right ear, thumb of your right hand, and the great toe of your right foot? What could that possibly mean? Like, if you put it on the second toe of your foot, does it ruin the whole thing? Are you now, is God mad now? Is he not happy he'll kill you? If you do it on the left side, like if someone's left-handed, will you be killed then? Is it really important? Does it interrupt the flow of the blessing thing? What could that possibly mean? So stupid. And he brought Aaron's sons, and Moses put of the blood upon the tip of their right ear and upon the thumbs of the right hand, and upon the great toes of their right feet, and Moses sprinkled the blood on the altar round about. And he took the fat and the rump, and all the fat that was upon the inwards, and the caul above the liver, and the two kidneys and the fat, and the right shoulder, and out of the basket of unleavened bread that was before the Lord, he took one unleavened cake, and a cake of oiled bread, and one wafer, and put them on the fat and upon the right shoulder. Almost done with this chapter. And he put up all upon Aaron's hands and upon his son's hands and waved them for a wave offering before the Lord. Hey, wave offering to the Lord. Everyone, wave offering to the Lord. Hey, wave offering. I think the Lord just wanted one more offering, just couldn't think of anything else. Like, gosh, I need another. There's only like two offerings. I need another third one. Three's a magic number. How about an offering where they wave to me? Wave offering. Yeah, simple as that. Stupid. And Moses took them from off their hands and burnt them on the altar upon the burnt offering. They were consecrations for a sweet savor. It is an offering made by fire unto the Lord. And Moses took the breast and waved it for a wave offering. Just took this cow breast and just, hey, waved. Hey, God, look what I have. It's a wave offering. God's like, oh, yeah, hey, good. Yeah, thanks. For of the ram of consecration, it was Moses' part, as the Lord commanded Moses. And Moses took of the anointing oil and of the blood which was upon the altar and sprinkled it upon Aaron and upon his garments and upon his sons and upon his sons' garments with him and sanctified Aaron and his garments and his sons' garments with him. More repetition. And Moses said unto Aaron and to his sons, boil the flesh at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation, and there eat it with the bread that is in the basket of consecrations, as I commanded, saying, Aaron and his sons shall eat it. And that which remaineth of the flesh and of the bread shall ye burn with fire, not with water, like you tried to do last time. Burn it with fire this time. And ye shall not go out of the door of the tabernacle of the congregation in 7 days, until the days of your consecration shall be at an end. For 7 days shall he consecrate you. Whew. Boy, that must have been boring. If that were me, I would have been like, hey, God, you know, sacrificing a bull each day, it only takes, 15, 20 minutes. And then we're just sort of hanging around. You know, no one's really doing much, and then and we're being consecrated for all that time. And sort of getting to me, I gotta say. I'm pretty bored. Can we just sacrifice the bulls like rapid fire, you know, all in a row, and then just get on with our lives, both of us? You know, you and me both, God. I mean, help me help you. I just think I could do this quite a bit faster, and we wouldn't have to have all this the downtime. As he hath done this day, so the Lord hath commanded to do, to make an atonement for you. Therefore shall ye abide at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation day and night 7 days, and keep the charge of the Lord, that ye die not, for so I am commanded. I always love how sort of like passive and matter-of-fact God's death threats are. He's saying, what he's actually saying is, stand, you will stand at the door of the tabernacle for 7 days, or I will kill you. But it comes out as, stand at the door of the tabernacle for 7 days, so that you don't die. You know, as if it's like looking both ways before crossing the road or something like that. You know, like, oh, and make sure not to do this, because you'll die. You'll be dead. But I mean, really, it's because God's going to kill them if they do that. It's not like this thing that's going to happen to them that God's telling them about. It's pretty directed. I just find that funny. So Aaron and his sons did all the things which the Lord commanded by the hand of Moses. All right, done with that chapter. All right, this boring chapter is a little shorter, so that's good. Good for us. Chapter 9, Book of Leviticus. And it came to pass on the eighth day that Moses called Aaron and his sons and the elders of Israel. And he... So he called the Aaron and his sons, and they must have just been like, oh, man, finally. Jeez. I was just about to freaking sacrifice myself. I was so bored. Oh, my gosh. Thank God the eighth day is here. Oh, that was... Ugh. That was probably the longest 7 freaking days of my life, I swear. The things we do for this fake God of ours, I'm telling you. And he said unto Aaron, take thee a young calf for a sin offering, and a ram for a burnt offering, without blemish, as usual. Put some cover up on those blemishes, and offer them before the Lord. I wonder, for any of these offerings, does the Lord ever go like, you know what, no thanks, I'm good. I don't need that. I don't need that lamb. I don't need that one. That one's good. I'll take that one. I'll take that offering. Thanks for offering that to me. No, don't need that. You know, I like that word, like an offering. Like, hey God, do you want this? And unto the children of Israel, thou shalt speak, saying, Take ye a kid of the goats for a sin offering, and a calf and a lamb, both of the first year without blemish, for a burnt offering, and also a bullock and a ram for peace offerings, to sacrifice before the Lord, and a meat offering mingled with oil, for today the Lord will appear unto you. And they brought that which, at this point, by the way, the Lord's animal sacrifice addiction has officially spun out of control. He's pretty much set up the animal sacrifice equivalent of a meth lab, which is like this slaughterhouse where everyone is sacrificing everything all the time for their sins. And like, I think this probably answers the question of why God made us so sinful. You know, why he doesn't just turn down the sin dial just a little bit on humanity. He has it, like, cranked to the max, and it's for maximum sacrifice. I think the people of Israel are going to need to stage an intervention with God, you know. It'd probably be a little easier if he didn't just murder people on sight, though. That would probably make it a little less awkward for them. And they brought that which Moses commanded before the tabernacle of the congregation, and all the congregation drew near and stood before the Lord. And Moses said, "This is the thing which the Lord commanded that ye should do. And the glory of the Lord shall appear unto you." And they said, "Did he just rhyme? Was that supposed to be a poem?" And Moses said unto Aaron, "Go unto the altar, and offer thy sin offering and thy burnt offering, and make an atonement for thyself and for the people, and offer the offering of the people, by the people, for the people, and make an atonement for them, as the Lord commanded, if you remember." Aaron says, "Oh yeah, no, I do remember that. Thanks. Thanks for telling me, Moses. No, that's good. Thanks for reminding me." And Aaron therefore went unto the altar and slew the calf of the sin offering, which was for himself. And the sons of Aaron brought the blood unto him, and he dipped his finger into the blood and put it upon the horns of the altar and poured out the blood at the bottom of the altar. But the fat in the kidneys and the caul of the liver of the sin offering he burnt upon the altar, as the Lord commanded Moses. And the flesh and the hide he burnt with fire without the camp. And he slew the burnt offering, and Aaron's sons presented unto him the blood which he sprinkled round about upon the altar. Oh, man, this is making me yawn. It's so boring. All that's happening, in case you fell asleep, is nothing. They're just doing some sacrificing. That's it. And it's in the exact manner which the Lord prescribed, I guess. And they presented the burnt offering unto him, and the pieces thereof, and the head, and he burnt them upon the altar. And he did wash the inwards and the legs, and burnt them upon the altar. This must have been the stinkiest freaking place. And he brought the people's offering, and took the goat, which was the sin offering for the people, and slew it, and offered it for sin as the first. And he brought the burnt offering, and offered it according into the manner. And he brought the meat offering, and took a handful thereof, and burnt it upon the altar, beside the burnt sacrifice of the morning. He slew also the bullock and the ram for a sacrifice of peace offerings, which was for the people. And Aaron's sons presented unto him the blood, which he sprinkled upon the altar round about, and the fat of the bullock and of the ram, the rump, and that which covereth the inwards, and the kidneys, and the caul above the liver. And they put the fat upon the breasts, and he burnt the fat upon the altar. And almost done. And the breasts and the right shoulder Aaron waved for a wave offering. "Hey, God, got these breasts and the right shoulder. Hey, I'm waving. Hi. Hi, say hi to God, everyone. Hi, hi. It's a wave offering." And Aaron lifted up his hand toward the people and blessed them, and came down from offering of the sin offering and the burnt offering and the peace offerings. And Moses and Aaron went into the tabernacle of the congregation and came out and blessed the people, and the glory of the Lord appeared unto all the people. And there came a fire out from before the Lord, and consumed upon the altar the burnt offering and the fat, which when all the people saw, they shouted and fell on their faces. Oh, it's so miraculous, a plume of fire has come and consumed all the offering out of the day. Ooh. Big miracle here, guys. No other possible explanation. No chance that Moses, since he wrote all this way later, after the fact, just made it up or just exaggerated it. No. Or even if he didn't do that, there's no possibility that, you know, something simply caught on fire on the table. Nope. Wow, God must exist. Did you see what he did in Leviticus chapter 9, verse 24? He sent a fire which burned stuff. Wow. Awesome. All right, on to chapter 10. Crapter 10. This one, actually, this is a little bit less of a crapter. It's starting to get better. Let's get into it, shall we? Verse 1. And Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron, took either of them his censer, and put fire therein, and put incense thereon. Innocent enough so far. They're doing their thing. And offered a strange fire before the Lord, which he commanded them not. Strange fire. And there went out fire from the Lord and devoured them, and they died before the Lord. All right. Bible is officially back to awesomeness, everyone. So poor Nadab and Abihu. God really did invent the zero tolerance policy. Seriously, they're just trying to do their job and they used the incorrect fire. Now, I'm pretty sure fire is nothing more than that which is consuming. But no, they use the incorrect fire. God insists that we use his personal fire, which is somehow better than other fire. And so no stern warning. Screw that. No calm and boring warning. Like, hey, next time, guys, next time you're doing this, I appreciate it. I appreciate everything. Could you just make sure to use this fire instead of, you know, none of that. No, not even like a slap on the wrist, you know. Nope, immolation. That's the appropriate penalty for this mistake they made. That ought to show them. Burn them to death. Come on, God. Just knock it out. Cut it out. You gave them the longest freaking instructions in the history of time, and they screwed one thing up that you actually didn't even mention, by the way. God hadn't mentioned using the correct fire. Trust me, he hadn't. I read through all those painful words. He mentioned nothing about it. But they were just supposed to know, and that way... All right, I'm done. Stupid. Two innocent people burned to death. Then Moses said unto Aaron, this is that the Lord spake, saying, I will be sanctified in them that come nigh me, and before all the people I will be glorified. And Aaron held his peace. And Moses called Mishael and Elzaphan, the sons of Uzziel, the uncle of Aaron, and said unto them, come near, carry your brethren from before the sanctuary out of the camp. Oh, by the way, once again, this was, no other explanation was offered here. That God sent down a holy fire and burned these people to death is unquestioned. There's no chance, there's no chance they were dicking around and something caught fire and burned them. Nah, couldn't be. Must have been God's holy fire. Only explanation. So they went near and carried them in their coats out of the camp, as Moses had said. And Moses said unto Aaron and unto Eleazar and unto Ithamar, his sons, uncover not your heads, neither rend your clothes, lest ye die, and lest wrath come upon all the people. But let your brethren, the whole house of Israel, bewail the burning which the Lord hath kindled. Wow. So Moses is saying here, essentially, don't grieve or it'll be your ass next. So that's the kind and loving Bible. Such a happy book. Don't grieve for your burnt to death brothers, because God will kill your ass. And he always says, lest ye die. No, it's not lest ye die. It's lest the freaking nut job upstairs murders you. A little different. You know, I'd say put on your seatbelt lest ye die. You know, not in those exact words. I'd probably say put on ye seatbelt lest ye die. But if there's a madman who's going to kill you, I'd probably say put on your seatbelt or you're going to get frickin' murdered by that madman who's going to kill you. I don't know. It's just an assumption that everything God does is somehow right, and it'll be their fault if they grieve for their brother. So, I don't know. And ye shall not go out from the door of the tabernacle of the congregation, lest ye die. Again. For the anointing oil of the Lord is upon you. Oh, yeah, that's a big one. If you go out with the anointing oil, you die. And they did according to the word of Moses. And the Lord spake unto Aaron, saying, do not drink wine or strong drink, thou nor thy sons with thee, when you go into the tabernacle of the congregation, lest ye die. It shall be a statute forever throughout the generations. Interesting. You know, it kind of sounds to me, so what's happened here? Nadab and Abihu are burned to death because they did something wrong. And the next thing God says is, make sure not to drink when you're in the tabernacle. Now, this kind of sounds to me like Nadab and Abihu might have been drinking on the job. And that's what happened. And that's why they were killed, burned to death, because of some sort of on-the-job drinking accident. So I think that's kind of interesting. And that ye may put difference between holy and unholy and between clean and unclean. And that ye may teach the children of Israel all the statutes which the Lord hath spoken unto them by the hand of Moses. And Moses spake unto Aaron and unto Eleazar and unto Ithamar, his sons that were left. His sons that were left. Yep. Couldn't be more true. His sons that were left. Take the meat offering that remaineth of the offerings of the Lord made by fire, and eat it without leaven beside the altar, for it is most holy. And ye shall eat it in the holy place, because it is thy due and thy son's due, of the sacrifices of the Lord made by fire. For so I am commanded. And the wave breast and the heave shoulder shall ye eat in a clean place, thou and thy sons and thy daughters with thee. For they be thy due and thy son's due, which are given out of the sacrifices of peace offerings of the children of Israel. The heave shoulder and the wave breast shall they bring with offerings made by fire to the fat of the fat, to wave it for a wave offering before the Lord. And it shall be thine and thy sons with thee by a statute forever, as the Lord hath commanded. Oh, by the way, if you're wondering what's been happening so far, not much. Two guys were murdered for doing the slightly wrong thing that God hadn't even told them. So God's death count, murder count is up to like, I don't know, a million and two. And, then, in a rare change for God, God's actually giving him some more rules. I know. It's unlike him. Is this the same God that's been in this book before giving all these rules? Who's this new God giving all these rules? Huh? Doesn't sound like him. So that's all that's happening. And a lot of these rules I can't even keep straight. I can't bring myself to care, you know, like what animal they sacrifice for what purpose and all that. Who cares? It's crap. And Moses diligently sought the goat of the sin offering and said, behold, it was burnt. And he was angry with Eleazar and Ithamar, the sons of Aaron, which were left alive, saying, wherefore have ye not eaten the sin offering in this holy place, seeing it is the most holy, and God hath given it you to bear the iniquity of the congregation, to make atonement for them before the Lord? Behold, the blood of it was not brought in within the holy place. Ye should indeed have eaten it in the holy place as I commanded. So, apparently they did something wrong. And Aaron, at this point, must have just said unto Moses, dude, do you really think I can keep all this bullshit straight? Honest, I don't even know what we're doing anymore. I have no idea. I lost track hours ago. I just sort of copy what you're doing. All this crap is ridiculous to me. You're going to come nag me that I didn't, like, take the blood inside and then do a dance with it and then eat the burnt part of one of the offerings. I don't care. I don't know. My two sons were just burned to death, and you're getting on me? You're riding my ass about this crap? That's what I said if I were Aaron. What Aaron actually said is, "Behold, this day they have offered their sin offering and their burnt offering before the Lord, and such things have befallen me. And if I had eaten the sin offering today, should it have been accepted in the sight of the Lord?" And when Moses heard that, he was content. That's how that chapter ends. I don't really get that. So Aaron said, "Look, I don't know." He said, "Behold, this day they have offered their sin offering and the burnt offering before the Lord, and such things have befallen me," meaning his son's dying. "And if I had eaten the sin offering today, should it have been accepted in the eyes of the Lord?" I don't know. Whatever. Who cares? Let's move on. Chapter 11. "And the Lord spake unto Moses and to Aaron, saying unto them, Speak unto the children of Israel, saying, These are the beasts which ye shall eat among all the beasts that are on the earth." Oh man, this is going to be good. He's going to tell them which animals they can and can't eat, and why, I guess. "Whatsoever parteth the hoof," meaning has two, like, sides to their hoof, like a cow, I guess, does, "and is cloven-footed, and cheweth the cud among the beasts, that shall ye eat." Oh, okay, so cows is the only thing I can think of, but maybe there are more. "Nevertheless, these shall ye not eat of them that chew the cud, or of them that divide the hoof, as the camel, because he cheweth the cud." See, okay, so here's our test. The camel cheweth the cud, check. But does he divideth the hoof? No, he divideth not the hoof. He is unclean to you, it says. He is unclean to you. So because he has not a divided hoof, he's unclean. So, picture, if you will, there could be, okay, there's a cow. Picture a cow standing there and next to a camel with a reasonable space between them. And the cow, all of a sudden, just like a rain of shit falls on the cow. And just like every piece of garbage you could possibly imagine falls onto it. And it's diseased and it has AIDS. And I don't think that's possible, but it does. And other STDs. And so it's basically the most disgusting thing ever. And the camel, on the other hand, picture a camel that just got out of a car wash. It's like waxed and shiny. But because the camel divideth not the hoof, oh, he's unclean. And the cow, but the cow is clean. He's good. He's good to go because he divideth the hoof and cheweth the cud. Yep, that makes him good to go. Doesn't matter what else. God logic. "And the coney, because he cheweth the cud, but divideth not the hoof, he is unclean to you." Again. "And the hare, because he cheweth the cud, but divideth not the hoof, he is unclean to you. And the swine, though he divideth the hoof and be cloven-footed, yet he cheweth not the cud." So it's one but not the other. He is unclean to you. The swine. Oh, you got to be kidding me. Not allowed to eat pig. Imagine, if you will, a world without bacon. I'm not going to imagine it, but you can imagine. I don't care to imagine a world without bacon, to be perfectly honest. But imagine, if you will, a world without bacon. That's it. That's all I got. That's the joke. I don't know. I just imagine that. Be a sucky world. And I don't mean the bacon that you get in the fast food restaurants that's actually like someone's little kid took a brown marker to a piece of construction paper and then cut it out in the shape of vaguely of bacon and put it in your burger. No, I'm not talking about that fast food crap. I'm talking about actual bacon. Imagine. None of that. No. I won't. I refuse. I refuse. I won't do it. I'm not going to imagine a world without bacon. Don't want to. Don't want to start crying. You know, not again. "Of their flesh ye shall not eat, and their carcase. It says carcase. Carcase is literally spelled carcase. shall ye not touch, they are unclean to you. These shall you eat of all that are in the waters. Whatsoever hath fins and scales in the waters, in the seas, and in the rivers, them ye shall eat. So fins and scales. So like goldfish are good, right? And all that have not fins and scales in the seas and in the rivers, and of all that move in the waters, and of any living thing which is in the waters, they shall be an abomination unto you. They shall be even an abomination unto you. Ye shall not eat of their flesh, but ye shall have their carcasses an abomination. Whatsoever hath no fins nor scales in the waters, that should be an abomination to you. Again, I'm not making jokes. I was reading that whole time, though. It said it like 8 times. So, why did God bother creating all these abominations, I wonder? Which is pretty much all shellfish, I guess, because they don't have, fins or scales or whatever it is, whatever it said. So they're all abominations? We can't eat them? Like, abominations of what? Why did God create them? Did he just mess up a bunch of times or something? And these, there, you know what? I wonder how many abominations, like, okay, if you took all the foods, the animals, I mean, that are good, according to God, and I'd wonder how many of those animals ate other animals that are so-called abominations, you know, but still somehow they're clean, you know? I wonder how that would work. Like, I could imagine you catch a fish or something that has in its stomach, because it just ate an ocean-dwelling creature that doesn't have fins. I could imagine. Maybe it ate a little eel or something. I don't know. Ate something. So would that make the thing you caught an abomination then? Or is it okay? All these stupid rules. There's no dumb rules. And these are they which ye shall have an abomination among the fowls. They shall not be eaten. They are an abomination. The eagle and the ossifrage and the osprey. The eagle, huh? I sort of think of the eagle as a regal creature. Abomination. Unpatriotic bastards. Oh, wait, never mind. America wasn't quite invented. And the vulture, and the kite after his kind, every raven after his kind, and the owl and the nighthawk, and the cuckoo and the hawk after his kind, and the little owl and the cormorant and the great owl and the swan and the pelican and the gear eagle. Wow. Were people eating a lot of eagles back then? How would they even catch an eagle? Is it... Because so far, with few exceptions, if any, it sounds like God's command is only eat the things which you guys already normally eat, because that's my rule. You know, like, seems a little fishy to me. I wonder if there was anyone, though, who's listening along, you know, Moses is railing off these commandments. And they're like, oh, dude, no pelican? Oh, come on. You tell me I can't eat pelican anymore. I'm out of this freaking religion. See you guys later. I'm out of this religion. Have fun not eating pelican, idiots. Had to be at least one. And the stork, the heron after her kind, and the lopping and lapwing and the bat, all fowls that creep going upon all four shall be an abomination to you. You know, I'm not really any kind of zoologist, but what the hell does this mean? Things that fly but also walk on all fours, like griffins or something, dragons, like Pegasus. Maybe I'm retarded, but I can't think of anything that qualifies under that. Things that have wings. Let me think. Things that have wings that also walk on all fours. I really can't think of anything. I'm probably going to sound so stupid. There's probably something obvious I'm missing, but like a winged zebra or something, like a cat with wings, or a dog that has, like, what? Whatever. All right, moving. Better move on. Yet these may ye eat of every flying, creeping thing that goeth upon all four, which have legs above their feet to leap withal upon the earth. Even these of them ye may eat, the locust after his kind, and the bald locust after his kind, and the beetle after his kind, and the grasshopper after his kind. Wow. Wow. God. Come on. Okay, so we can't eat eagles because they're abominations. These regal creatures that are like gorgeous looking. We can't eat them because they're abominations. But beetles and grasshoppers are good to go. They're fine. They're clean beasts. Beetles and grasshoppers are clean. There are beetles called dung beetles that literally eat dung. But they're good. They're clean. But not those disgusting, dirty eagles. Ugh. Like, what? How are you determining all this, God? I don't understand you sometimes. God, I have a hard time understanding you sometimes. You know? I think we need to see a counselor or something. My relationship with God is just, I don't think it can be repaired. I don't know what God's thinking anymore. I don't. I don't know what to do. But all other flying, creeping things, which have 4 feet, shall be an abomination unto you. Again, I can't think of a flying, frog. Flying, creeping thing, which has 4 feet. I can't think of anything. And for these ye shall be unclean. Whosoever toucheth the carcase of them shall be unclean until the even. And whoever beareth aught. Wow. Touch. So you can't even touch the carcass of them. Or any of them. Yeah, you can't even touch them and they're unclean. It's weird rules. And whosoever beareth aught of the carcass of them shall wash his clothes and be unclean until the even. The carcasses of every beast which divideth the hoof and is not cloven-footed nor cheweth the cud are unclean to you. Everyone that toucheth them shall be unclean. And whatsoever goeth upon his paws upon all manner of beasts that go on all four, those are unclean to you. Whoso toucheth their carcase shall be unclean until the even. And he that beareth the carcass of them shall wash his clothes and be unclean until the even. They are unclean unto you. Okay, we get the message. These also shall be unclean unto you among the creeping things that creep upon the earth. The weasel and the mouse and the tortoise after his kind and the ferret and the chameleon and the lizard and the snail and the mole. And, by the way, in all the Bible notes I read, the funny thing is that this is all completely meaningless because every single one I read... it says, the ferret. This is supposed to mean like some other animal, like it wasn't translated right. You know, like what they did, I guess, is translate it to the nearest animal that we had, which is not really what they had. So it's kind of funny. These are unclean to you among all that creep. Whosoever doth touch them when they be dead shall be unclean until the even. And upon whatsoever any of them, when they are dead, doth fall, it shall be unclean, whether it be any vessel of wood, or raiment, or skin, or sack. Whatsoever vessel it be, wherein any work is done, it must be put into water, and shall be unclean until the even. So shall it be cleansed. So pretty much if a dead one of these horrible abominations, touches something, that thing is unclean. This is all a bunch of crap. Shouldn't even have to summarize this for you. It's so dumb. And every earthen vessel whereinto any of them falleth, whatsoever is in it shall be unclean, and ye shall break it. So if they touch the outside of like a pot, whatever's inside of it is now dirty, unclean, and you have to throw it away. Idiots. Of all meat which may be eaten, that on which such water cometh shall be unclean. And all drink that may be drunk in every such vessel shall be unclean. And everything whereupon any part of their carcass falleth shall be unclean. Whether it be on be oven or ranges for pots, they shall be broken down, for they are unclean. Shall be unclean unto you. Unclean, unclean, unclean. How many times have I just read that freaking word? Nevertheless, a fountain or pit where there is plenty of water shall be clean. But that which toucheth their carcass shall be unclean. I don't know how that... whatever. And if any part of their carcass fall upon any sowing seed which is to be sown, If you guessed it shall be unclean, you are actually wrong. It says it shall be clean. So if if any part of, I'll read it again, if any part of their carcass fall upon any sowing seed which is to be sown, it shall be clean. So so if an unclean animal touches all these things become dirty. But if it touches a seed, then the seed is then clean. Well, like even if the seed was clean to begin with, is it? What if it was a totally like disgusting seed that fell in like a cow crap? But if you touch an unclean animal to it, then it's clean. Is that how that works? I don't know. But if any, oh, get this though. This is an interesting little, again, this is like tax law. If any water be put upon the seed and any part of their carcass fall thereon, it shall be unclean to you. So it's clean until it touches water or something that has not been, I don't. And if any beast of which ye may eat die, he that toucheth the carcass thereof shall be unclean until the even. And he that eateth of the carcass of it shall wash his clothes and be unclean until the even. He also that beareth the carcass of it shall wash his clothes and be unclean until the even. And every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth shall be an abomination. It shall not be eaten. Whatsoever goeth, almost done, whatsoever goeth upon the belly and whatsoever goeth upon all four, or whatsoever hath more feet among all the creeping things that creep upon the earth, them ye shall not eat, for they are an abomination. Again, why did he bother to make all these stupid things? Ye shall not make yourselves abominable with any creeping thing that creepeth, neither shall you make yourselves unclean with them, that ye should be defiled thereby. For I am the Lord your God. Ye shall therefore sanctify yourselves, and ye shall be holy, for I am holy. And neither shall ye defile yourselves with any manner of creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. For I am the Lord that bringeth you up out of the land of Egypt to be your God. Ye shall therefore be holy, for I am holy. This is the law of the beasts, and of the fowl, and of every living creature that moveth in the waters, and of every creature that creepeth upon the earth. Man, that's a lot of freaking creatures to be summed up in just like a handful of pages. But, you know, that's how God works. You know, they don't mention any marsupials in this. I'm wondering why that is. Is it because they didn't know about them because they're not from the same island that they're from? Could it be? You would have thought in all of this that they would have mentioned at least like one kangaroo or something like that. Come on, he's talking about all the animals of the earth. Do they have hooves? They don't even have hooves. They're not even part. To make it, let's see, where am I? Okay. Oh, last verse. To make a difference between the unclean and the clean, and between the beasts that may be eaten and the beasts that may not be eaten. Wow. Who in heaven, my question is, who up in heaven was in charge of beast cleaning and cleanliness? Because, like, why didn't God just make them all clean? I don't get it. Couldn't he have just made all clean beasts? Is there some reason why he couldn't do that? He is all powerful, right? Still. Wow, what a stupid chapter that was. Going along declaring certain animals clean and others not. The Bible. We have good times. All right. Well, that's the end of another week, week 5. And I will see you whenever, I guess, you double-click on the next episode. Unless you're somehow caught up with me and everything. Then I will see you in a week from now, I guess, is when I'll have the next episode. Plus the weekend. And I'm hoping it's that. Gosh, it could be 2 weeks, depending on what's going on here. I'll keep in touch. I'll let you guys know. So, all right. Thanks a lot, you guys, and have a good weekend, and see you later.